Milo, I have a quick question for you. What is a pirate's favorite letter?
Nar,
it'd be the sea. And that brings us beautifully onto the podcast's premier sponsor. For the first time, we have got ourselves a rum hookup, and it is from the beautiful, beautiful people at J. Gal Rum. It is a Scottish Island rum, inspired by pirates and distilled beside the sea. If you'd like to get your hands on a bottle of this lovely, well, tonight we're drinking the spice stuff, but they also do aged bottles, which we've heard is very good, but we're yet to sample that. So we can only vouch for the spice so far, and it is delicious. And if you want to taste it, head to jgalrum.com and use the code RUMANDSTOKE for 10% off all your orders.
That was a smooth introduction, Nate. Probably the smoothest one you've ever done. Done in one take and just as smooth as the spice rum that we're drinking today. But enough of the rum, let's get on with the stoke. Because welcome to another episode of the Rum and Stoke podcast, this week joined by New School's editor, Twig Spensley. Let's get straight into it. And just as you know, the rum is flowing. The language might be a little bit un-PG, but enough of that, let's get straight into it.
Welcome to the show, Twig. Good to have you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure, dude. Pleasure. I think all of us here sort of know you as primarily the editor of New Schoolers.
Yeah.
Do you want to give sort of the listeners a brief introduction to yourself, just to give a lowdown of who and what you do?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I, like a lot of people who work in the ski industry, I guess, just wanted to find a way to keep skiing and be able to sort of, yeah, make money, go skiing as much as possible, and started off just writing a like a couple of bits of freelance stuff here and there for New Schoolers, and like was willing to work a fair amount for no money and then some money and then enough money to pay rent, and like it kind of just built from there. So it's been a fun process getting here, but now that I'm like where I am, it's a pretty awesome way of keeping my skiing going and getting to travel and yeah, skiing, being involved in skiing, like getting to make decisions that I'm in no way qualified to make, that kind of stuff.
Oh, dude, that sounds awesome. How long ago did you start the freelance writing?
I guess it was probably at least 6 years ago, maybe. I'm trying to remember, like, it feels like a long time. I was a teacher in a school when I started doing it, and then I was just, like, spending all my salary, like, going to the Alps and fucking burning the planet, and I was like, I probably need to just not do that. So started doing this, and, yeah, kind of just grew from, do you want to try and write one piece? And, like, when we had a magazine way back, like, did one piece for that, and then now it grew into a full-time gig.
That's solid, man. Yeah, there's Milo's on that journey, eh?
Yeah.
Trying to.
It's a good journey. Like, at least you get free skis even at the beginning, so.
Yeah. Came through the post the other day. Yeah. Staring at them already.
Stoked. Yeah, Milo is currently my legs. Yeah.
I suppose that's a big part of the job, I guess, like doing all the ski tests and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
I reckon like you must have had a shit ton of pairs like on your feet over the years.
I skied like and owned an embarrassing number of pairs of skis for like how much damage I do to them. I guess like so many of them I just like ski for a week and then they're fine. I mean, I keep hold of them and I like pass them on to other people or sell some of them, but like I must have tested, I don't know, like I guess I've had like 50 pairs maybe in the last 4 or 5 years, something like that. I don't know, like just crazy.
That's a staggering amount.
Yeah, it's like, and I'm pretty good about like not wasting them, if that makes sense. Like I don't let them build up. Like I don't just have tons of pairs of skis sitting in my cupboard. Like when I've skied them, I'll like pass them on to someone that's like pretty good and like needs a pair of skis and doesn't have a sponsor, or like sometimes I'll sell them if I'm like low on cash, but like I won't keep too many pairs in the cupboard. Like, it's kind of a delicate balance to dance, because like I'm getting them a season before usually they release, so like usually you're sitting on them for a bit, and like you can have like all of the half the current ski line in your cupboard, and you're like, I feel bad wasting this, but I don't want to tread any toes by like competing with stuff that's like, you know, selling stuff that's currently on the market and taking a sale away from a brand or anything like that. So like I'm pretty careful to never sell anything when it's in season, unless it's like a, you know, someone has like just snapped their skis and I'll just like give them a pair. But other than that, like I keep them at least for that. But
like the Robin Hood of the ski industry.
Yeah, except that the people you're robbing from are poor too, yeah.
Yeah, man, story of our lives, really.
Have you ever tested a pair of skis that you're like, holy shit, these are amazing, these are definitely not going to anyone else but me? Like, is any, you kind of had any stand up? Or at the other end of the spectrum, and they're like, actually, these are two stiff planks that...
I find, like, writing ski reviews and, like, reviewing skis is a really difficult gig, because it's really hard to take your personal opinions out of it. And obviously, like, I have a preference in skis, but I try and write reviews that are like from the perspective of how good I think these skis are for the person that would want those skis. So I've definitely had skis that I've put on and loved and also not given a very good review, because like I'm like, well, being balanced, these are terrible for lots of things, they're just exactly what I want. And then on the flip side, I've had skis that like totally didn't fit me, but they absolutely like ripped for certain things. And I have to be like, well, they're great skis if this is how you ski. They're like really well built, or they perform really well on steep lines or something. But for me, they don't work. So it's kind of like a balancing act. I'm trying to think of like specific examples. Yeah, like Vishnu skis, like they're like super rocket and super soft. And for me, that's like perfect, because I just like bushing around and like doing silly shit on skis now, because I'm getting old a bit and I'm not trying to hit like the biggest jumps ever, or not that I ever really was. But so for me, they were perfect. But then I didn't give them like a full on glowing review, because you have to say like they're not the best skis on piste, or they're not the best skis for like charging or whatever. And that was kind of a difficult one, because I loved them, and I said at the end of the review like I loved them, but you know, they're for this. And sometimes like I don't think they were that stoked on the review. Like, I mean, I sort of understand why, because actually you want your ski review to go, these are amazing for everything, so people buy them. But like the whole point of it is to try and write reviews that are useful for people who are trying to like separate stuff for me. So yeah, I do my best to do that, and don't always write the best reviews for the skis I like the most. I think that's probably the most difficult bit.
Sounds like the good way to go about it. I mean, it feels like you're writing it for the audience, you know, the people that might want to buy the ski rather than the brand that's asking you to write the review.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly what we try and do, because like, I mean, new scores at the end of the day is like community first. So there's no point in us publishing a bunch of marketing material as our like in-depth reviews, because then we are not doing a service to that community. That's like the point of the site existing. So it's an attempt to do as good a job as possible of that.
Yeah, for sure. I've always read the, like before I got involved with writing a few of them, like always read them as like the God's honest truth about these skis, and something that's like, yeah, like you say, you might love something, but you're presenting it as like for the general public as best you can, and for the ski community. And I've always read them and found them a really good way to distinguish like the littlest things from two skis that from marketing materials look very similar on paper.
Yeah.
But like the roof box has always been good at like having those differences in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the aim of it. That's like always what I wanted to do with it, is like there are other people writing great reviews, like Blister write brilliant reviews. And that was kind of something I modeled the initial roof box reviews off. But it was like, they're kind of like really good skiers. Well, they're like all mountain, big mountain skiers. And they had like some park guys do some testing, but their reviews were always like pretty serious and musicals was kind of like Roofbox reviews were kind of meant to be the reviews for just like someone who's in a small park on the East Coast. Or like some of the skis I mostly tested in Hamel Snowdome, like, and it was like, I'd take them on a couple of groomers to ride and see how they perform when I was out in Switzerland. But the bulk of the testing was just like smash them onto metals in a fridge. So
it's going to be the same this season when the Swamp opens in Glasgow.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and that environment, like the snow dome or the dry slope environment, is pretty similar to what a lot of people end up skiing. I mean, all the ski media comes from like Colorado or Utah or Japan or whatever, and it's like these epic conditions. But a lot of people are buying skis are riding like the Midwest in the States or the East Coast or like small hills in Finland or Sweden or whatever. And those are the people that kind of get kind of forgotten by the ski industry because it's not very glamorous, but they're buying quite a lot of stuff. And the same goes obviously for domes and dry slopes in the UK. Like, that's where the core of the scene is. It's just not very glamorous.
I think Hemel's a very glamorous place.
Almost nothing about Hemel is glamorous.
To know the way out is.
The entrance hall is quite fancy. I'll give him that.
That's actually something I was going to talk to you about. Was the super unknown, because I mean, that's something that you guys judge each year, right? You judge the finalists. And
yeah.
I mean, how's that differing this year? Because I know that there's a lot of, well, not a lot, but I've seen that some people aren't able to make it to the finals.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've never been to the live event just because, well, mostly because I try not to fly at transatlantic if I can avoid it. Like, usually I'd go once a year to do like outdoor retailer and a ski test. But other than that, I try and not fly too much, which is kind of hard with the job, but I like do my best. So we've had people out there do it, but we don't judge the final. Like, it's rider judged in the finals, but we judge the videos. And it's like, usually myself and one of the other guys from U School is Josh Berman from level one, the other level one guys, and a couple of ex-athletes and stuff, like, pick the videos out. So that's always a slightly grueling but very interesting process, because it's like you probably get like on average, I guess, 100 entries roughly, and like maybe 90 are really good. So it's like, fuck, like you watch these kids and I'm like, certainly now it's very far from the level at which these kids are skiing at. So like, it's difficult to make those calls.
It's insane what the kids can do at the moment. Yeah. But like, with the sort of the COVID implications, just that it's had just over the season as a whole, like with loads less people like getting to ride. And I mean, like, hasn't really affected like the national team, like training and stuff. But I mean, like the people that fall into the super unknown category, like, did you still get as many applications this year or submissions? Like,
there was still about 100 entries. I would say they were like skewed more heavily to North America this year, which is good because it's only the North Americans that will be able to go to the finals anyway, because like none of the Euro guys go into the States for Super Unknown because there's no way they're getting the pro athlete passports or whatever you need to do to get in there. But by and large, it was like not too different, I think, in the States this season. Like, they had some restrictions on the resorts and some of the reservations really pissed people off during the peak weeks, but I think they mostly got to go skiing. Kind of like Switzerland, I guess, like people just skied through the winter. And also Sweden and Norway, I think, seemed like the resorts were open, certainly Sweden. And so that's where we kind of got the entries from. Like, you basically saw almost no French entries, almost no Austrian entries. And that kind of sucks because obviously you want everyone to have a shot at it. But this year is going to be a pretty weird year anyway for the finals, because anyone Euro that made the finals in the videos won't be going to the shoot, and they'll be picking semi-finalists to take their spots from the States. So it's kind of like US and Canada only.
Yeah, it's a shame, but there'll still be some banger videos to watch, and it's been a good year.
Yeah, I mean, there was plenty of crazy entries to deal with, so it wasn't an issue on that front. Like, when you, I mean, I'm sure Gaz has even more of an insight into this than me, but like, when you see the like 15th dub 16 in a row and they all look good, it's like hard to differentiate between them. And I guess that's actually way easier in Super Unknown, because you can just be like, well, that's all they did. So you can kind of like be, did they hit street? Did they hit like POW? Did they do anything like unique to set them apart? And that's kind of like a useful metric that you can use when you're not maybe like constrained to a more technical set of judging criteria. You can kind of just go like, all right, well, there's 15 of this same kid that can do both ways, dub 14 and six onto a rail, like every single time. But one of them bothered to go out and film street clips, and that is kind of what level one are looking for. So that's kind of our criteria. And I mean, that would be my criteria too, if I got to choose. So that makes it easier.
Yeah, because I sometimes find like the video judging even harder than like live judging, because at least live judging, like, cool, kind of got to get a score in, looks about there. But like the video stuff, you can just rewatch and rewatch and rewatch. Yeah. You end up analyzing like the smallest bit and be like, all right, let's go to the grab at like 4.2 seconds, and here, let's go to the grab here, and like end up going way into detail with it. So yeah, like, yeah, if you can separate with like, actually, this kid did something completely unique, completely creative elsewhere, just as a bit of a standout function, then yeah. Throw them through, I think.
I mean, yeah, that's totally how I look. I mean, I think it's pretty loose. Like, level one aren't particularly like stringent with their criteria, so they kind of like, they give us vague, they give us like, I can't remember what it is, it's like 10% creativity or video production or something, and 20% technicality, and 30% style, and then 40% overall impression. So it's basically just overall impression. So
that was something I was going to ask about, because I wondered how much sort of like emphasis you gave to video production. Because like, I remember, I think there was definitely a video submission, was it last year or the year before? Monty Wright's edit. Where I was like, yeah, like it was just like the production in it was just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, I think there's some, and I think it probably sways. I would guess it sways the guys that are into video. Like, I mean, the level one guys are obviously into video. So I think it probably makes more of an impact on some people than others, but like it's sort of the point of a Super Unknown to like overlook your sort of, should I say, like base level disadvantages. So like if someone's skiing in a shitty park, you try and overlook that and be like, well, this is the best they could, like, he's got crazy style, and this is the best they could possibly do in Trollhaugen in the Midwest. Or like this kid skiing on like one broken ski, but he's still like, there's an element of like trying to level the playing field and trying to give people who are actually unknown a chance to make it, essentially. And so video production, I think I would say I don't really pay any attention to it when I'm judging those, because as long as like the trick's in focus and it's still, you can tell what it is and it's like a good trick, then that's kind of the point. Like, you're judging the skier.
Yeah, not who's got, you know, like Premiere Pro.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because sometimes it's like who has access to a big mountain line. It's like that makes a, you know, for me, variety is like key, and being able to ski a bit of everything and like make it all look good is my favorite thing to see in a skier. So like someone who's got a bit of street and a bit of backcountry or whatever makes an edit for me, like that versatility and that ability to just be a good skier. And, but then you have to obviously factor in that some of these kids are like 17 and they live in the Midwest and the backcountry is literally like the other side of the trash heap on which they're skiing. So like you have to like just try and balance it out. And I think the level one guys, especially like after we've judged, do a really great job of like filtering through the results and by and large finding the right people for the spots.
Is there anyone that's like put in an application? Because obviously like the whole thing about Super Unknown is that they're like sort of current underdogs in like the ski world. Is anyone that's like put in an application, you're like, shit, dude, like that guy's pro. Like, he can't be in it.
I haven't personally had to do that because like my remit is generally just to judge the entries.
Right. And it sounds like it's happened though.
Yeah. As I understand it, like now and again, there are people that have been pro or become pro since they entered or like become kind of too famous over the course of it so that they didn't win. Especially like, I mean, that some of it's just like hearsay and sometimes you see it now. So like, for example, for this year's finals, they were like picking athletes from last year's winners and this year's winners to like try and make up the field basically. And Pete, who's in Strictly Films, like Pete Kukaev, I don't know how to say his surname. He pulled out because he was like, I'm getting paid now. So I won't go to the finals kind of thing. And there's a few guys that have like definitely been in there and you've been like, well, you were in the finals. It was a few years ago or like that. And people have been like, maybe put in the semifinals again when they should have been a finalist because they'd already been to the finals, but then they got voted into the finals again anyway, that kind of stuff. But it's, by and large, it's a pretty open process and they're basically pretty clear. Like anyone that isn't getting paid to ski is as applicable, and that's a larger number of people than you think. You mean they could have been a famous skier for like at least 5 years and still be making $0 off it. So
yeah, man, those contracts are elusive in this industry.
Yeah. For sure. It's a tough industry to be in, especially as an athlete.
Oh, definitely, man. Definitely. All right. So we actually had Sarah Hofflin on, I think we touched on her a minute ago, but we had Sarah Hofflin on the podcast a couple of weeks back. And when we asked her who the funnest people that she skied with, she said that you were the funnest person that she likes to shred with.
After a boyfriend.
Yeah, she said her boyfriend first, but then with a bit of Brian, you came out in the mixer. She mentioned like her reasoning about it was that you sort of, I think you and her stay behind for like just lap or hikes and rails one day when it was like a while, everyone else had gone home, the weather was shit, and you guys just kept on smashing it. She was like, yeah, man, I just love shredding with Twig. And I was like, we were all thinking sort of like, you must ski with a lot of pros throughout the years and sort of who stands out for you is like good to go on a shred with.
Yeah, I mean, one way or another, I've skied with a lot of people who everyone wants to ski with kind of thing. In terms of just like for fun, Sarah's definitely up there because I know exactly like the session she was talking about. It was like apocalyptically shitty weather in Zasfei in the summer and you couldn't see like the end of the rail from the takeoff and we couldn't see whether the lift was still running. And we were just like, yeah, let's just lap because it's funny kind of basically to just go and do some dumb shit. And we always have like, we have a pretty good banter because like she's pretty positive about everything and I pretty much hate everything. So it kind of balances out. But like, I mean, she's always super fun to ski with and like to drink with. And who else is realistic? Like Dan Hanker is really fun to ski with. He probably complains even more than me. So that's like nice to see. Nice to be around. In terms of like skiers that like blow you away when you ski with them. The first time I kind of went to a major event was B&E Invitational. It was like right the first one or the second one, right when I started at New Schoolers, because they didn't have anyone in Europe and they were like, ah, fuck it, we'll just send the freelance guy. And I can't remember how I got there. And I was like, the first day I got on the lift, it was like Duncan Adams, Parker White, Amit, Chris Logan.
Jesus.
And just to like go and shred a lap before the event started, like went up to the top of Les Arc and just like seeing Parker White ski and that being like the first pro skier I'd like seen ski outside of the park, I guess. It was just like, oh, these guys are just a totally other level. Like you sort of can't comprehend how good at skiing they are until they're just like throwing tricks off random hits to like the most disgusting mogul fields. And it's like, yeah, okay. Like And I was just like, just holding on for dear life, trying to keep up, like so out of breath at the bottom, like destroyed. And like, probably had to go for a lie down for like 2 hours after one lap. But, and almost every skier you ski with ultimately is just like super impressive. How good the bunch guys are at skiing is really, because you kind of have this image of them like doing silly stuff in the streets and like maybe not being the most technical guys, but then when you actually ski with them and they're just skiing for fun, like round the bowls at B&E or in the park, they're insanely talented, like edge control, that kind of stuff.
I remember seeing videos of those guys like in powder for the first time and just thinking, shit, they can literally do that anywhere.
Yeah.
Stuff that like I thought that was like, they've just honed that in like the street.
I feel like to like ski as loose as they ski, you've got to have such solid foundations and like be really good like as a core, and then like you can be that loose and that creative because everything else is so rock solid.
Yeah, for sure. Seeing those guys at B&E as well, and like just like how they were able to pump around the course and like match transitions perfectly was one of them. I'm trying to think who else that like really stands out. Sammy Ortlieb is another one. He's just like, you see him doing mostly like kind of creative, small, slow speed stuff, but he's just like incredibly good at skiing. And he's one of the people I always like see ski. And he was one of the first people I met. And I think he was also the first person I ever like did an interview with for New Schoolers, because I knew him beforehand and I was just like random freelance guy. And I was like, okay, I know one pro skier, so I'll interview him.
Foot's in the door now. There's no stopping.
Yeah. he was just always like crazy to watch skiing, super creative, like taking different lines in parks that you shouldn't really be able to. And I guess that's the stuff that always really stands out to me, is just like people who do different things. So yeah, that's some of the guys. I don't know. It's a long list because almost everyone that you ski with is really impressive. So
yeah, I get that. I'm constantly overwhelmed by watching people that I go skiing with. So yeah, I feel that a lot. There's another thing you touched on there. You said that Sarah was a good drinking buddy. So I'm assuming you've had a lot of social interaction with some of these pros, eh?
Yeah, a fair bit. Like, I'm pretty boring though, so I'm often like, this is really bad because New Schoolers has this super like cool heavy drinking reputation, but I'm like not a heavy drinker or partier generally. So like often like they're probably out and having crazy adventures, but I'm at home, so
I have no idea.
Fair enough, man.
But like, yeah, I mean, skiers party pretty hard, just the same as season as like pro skiers go pretty hard. And high five is always a crazy time. IF3 back in the day was a crazy time. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of weird. Like, I guess we've all been in lockdown for like a year and a half now. I've kind of forgotten what it's like. But
yeah, memories of rubbing shoulders in bars has faded pretty quickly,
yeah,
haven't they?
For sure. It's difficult to think back on being able to just, yeah, I don't know, have 100 pro skiers in a bar getting wasted and smashing stuff. But I guess that's, I'm just trying to think of like who is particularly notable for their ability to contain alcohol.
Not Nate.
I won't take that title. But how about it? Like, while you think, Twig, I feel like we could pass it over to our New Schoolers cohort, Milo, to tell us what sort of alcohol he likes to drink on the hill.
on the hill, and while recording the Rum and Stoke podcast, we drink Jagal rum, inspired by pirates and distilled by the seas on the island of Orkney. Jagal rum is delicious, neat, or in a cocktail or with a mixer.
Cheers.
And I think Gaz can tell our listeners a little bit more about how you can get hold of some yourself.
So if you're after some rum to sip along whilst you listen to the podcast, make sure you head across to jgowrum.com, enter the discount code RUMANDSTOKE, and you'll get 10% off all your orders. Not even just your first order, every single order. So get stuck in the rum, get the drinks cabinet filled up to get you through the rest of lockdown, and we'll get back to the podcast and see if Twig has thought of a rowdy skier in a bar.
Jeez, boys, that rolled right off the tongue.
That was really impressive. You're going to cut this bit out, but you just smashed that.
No, we're keeping that in, man.
That's the first time Milo said distilled and not brewed as well. That's like a complete success.
Oh, yeah, that's taken a few goes around, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I think Ante is pretty high on the list of people I find the alcohol consumption to be impressive. Like, I remember, so
he's Finnish, right?
Yeah, he's Finnish, and that's probably the reason
they got the rep. Like,
yeah. But I like hung out with him quite a lot at the first B&E because he's Finnish and therefore relatively quiet and reserved, and I'm relatively quiet and reserved. So like we got pretty drunk at the end of Zinc Party, and I was probably, and it was a free open bar, and I was probably on like one pint per three that he was drinking maybe. And I was like pretty trashed. I don't really drink a lot, and I probably drank like, I don't know, 10 pints or something over the course of the night. So he was probably on like minimum 25. And he doesn't really change. He sways more. But that's about the only discernible difference. Like, and I went home, I don't know, like 4 or something. And he just, I don't know, he kept going. Apparently, like, he was just swaying around the halls at like 7 in the morning in the hotel, and he was still just absolutely fine. Like, woke up the next day, he was all right. It's just like, it's a ridiculous ability to put away alcohol with seemingly no consequences. Hopefully he's like got a bit older and he's at least feeling it now, because otherwise that's just not fair. But yeah, him and
the Finns do it just different. Like all the skiers coming out of Finland are crazy, and
Ski or Die is the one.
I was literally just gonna talk about Ski or Die. Like, I haven't, you know, it'd be good to bring that back.
Yeah, I've never actually been to Ski or Die, because there's usually like multiple events all at the same time at that time of year, and I've like not ended up going to that one.
It's super hard to get to as well. I looked into it like the last year I ran, I looked into it, and it's super hard to get to. Like, the closest airport is like
about
hours away. So like a couple of flights a year that go there. It's like
relatively like good story about Ski or Die, relating to new schoolers at least, is I couldn't go. So the first year we sent our social media guy, and he is from the Midwest in the States. I actually can't remember what city, depressingly, and I should know, but like he had to get his passport to go. So at this point he has never left the, you know, he never left the US. He's like, I don't know, 21 at this point, maybe 22. And he's just like, first passport, first international flight, first thing. Sent him off to middle of nowhere Finland to watch like the craziest kids brush their teeth with toilet brushes and send triple backflips and scream metal music into the night. And like, he kind of like went radio silent for the first 2 days, and we were like, we thought he's dead. And like day three, he emerges from like probably the worst hangover ever. And it's just like, this is the greatest thing I've ever done in my life, and proceeded to go back for the next 3 remaining years or whatever. And I think to this day, he's only ever left the United States to go to Ski or Die. But so I don't really know if he just thinks that's what the rest of the world is like, or
that's anything. Every other ski resort, you know, like, you leave Park City, it's just Ski or Die.
Yeah. But yeah, and he just left New Schoolers after like 5 years. So yeah, I want to see, like, might as well. He probably never listened to this, but if he does, like, big shout out to Matt, because he crushed it for years and took on the Ski or Die crown.
And still has a head of a baby doll somewhere in his house, I think.
When I think of Ski or Die, I just think of those like baby doll heads, I swear, with the like upside down cross and just metal.
It's such a good idea. I wish we could run something like that for new schoolers, but with like being based in the States, and yeah, we would just get the most sued anyone has ever been sued. So it's probably not gonna happen.
That was literally, honestly, an inspiration for when we started running events at After Jam. Yeah. I was literally like, Ski or Die, man. I was like, that's what inspired me, like the first time round that we had it. And like, we ended up just getting like big DJs in and just like a shitload of uni students.
Yeah.
And like, it was carnage. Like it was carnage, but I mean, it was like, it was just different vibes. Like you can't replicate that. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I feel like in the UK and like the US, it's like, we've got them health and safety laws. I mean, we can't throw like the big, like high jump, like comps that they have over there. Sort of. Like.
Yeah. I think in the States, probably even more true, but also I just feel like there's something about Scandinavians, man.
It's just like
the crazy thing about that is like if you meet any of the Kish guys or any of the like Finnish kids in general, like Foro or whatever, they're all so chill. They're like really mellow, quiet kids who just like by and large ski and then go to bed and they're super fucking good at skiing, like, and they're super chill. And then somehow like there's an alcohol tipping point where they go from like mega chill to like,
I will smash everything in my path and I will fight anyone and I will, and I don't know like what that switching point is, but that switching point, whatever that is, they keep it constant for the entirety of Skiota.
Yeah, fair play, man. I think Milo and I ran into a few of them in L2A the year before last.
Yeah.
And like, I think the first time we met them, like we were out on the same week, and the first time we met them, they were definitely on the party mode. So that was switched on for sure.
Yeah.
And they were causing carnage in the streets. And we were like, oh shit, boys, let's get involved with that. Like, I had no idea who they were at the time. And like, we were just like going in for the pie and like saw them out on the hill next. They were like, oh my days. And then, you know, we like, I think it clocked like halfway through or partway through the night. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had my ass handed to me in a game of beer pong by Tukapori.
Mm.
Got absolutely destroyed by the Finns at beer pong.
Yeah, they will probably beat anyone at anything alcohol related.
Because Twig, you've reffed a few slush games, haven't you? Lori Kavari and Paben at Bispingen. Yeah. That was the only one that I could remember and confirm with some research. But were there any others?
I'm trying to remember. I think I've done maybe three. I did LSM and Will at Bispingen 2, and I think I ended up doing one. I think I did one at Akimbo Sessions once, maybe. I'm trying to remember because I, like, as a rule, anytime I end up on either a microphone or a camera, I never watch it.
That's the
golden rule. So, like, I've done a bunch of, like, YouTube broadcasting and all that kind of stuff. Never looked at any of it. Like, I'm just like, what will be.
So I guess you're not going to listen to the pod.
I might not. Because I hate the sound of my own voice. And yeah, I don't really like being like the center of attention generally. So my solution to have it, like, I've accepted that it's going to come up in work now and again, that I'm going to have to do some like TV stuff or like podcasts, and I don't mind doing it. I just don't want to see myself there. Like, I like the idea of doing it. I just don't like seeing the results.
Yeah. But you can listen to all the Rum and Stoke podcasts that don't contain your own voice.
Yeah.
When you're next on the exercise bike.
Yeah, I'll check out what Sarah actually said about me on one of them.
Yeah, they were completely lying, man. It was,
yeah, I could totally believe it.
That's an extra listener for us. Guys, all right, so if we get back to slush then, we sort of toyed around with a few potential slush games where we could say, like, if we throw some names at you as like a slush ref, right?
Yeah.
you would have to decide who would win in a game of such. I mean, we can sort of pick the park as well, if that helps, because I mean, some are obviously way more skewed to rails or jump.
Yeah, sure. I'll give it a go. I mean, it's going to be hard to call.
All right, should we start off at sort of, you know, at the Sunset Park? Because I mean, that's mad rail base, so we can sort of...
That place is crazy fun.
Have you skied there yourself?
Yeah, it's one of the fun, like most fun places I've ever skied. I can't remember, like, that probably the best, maybe the best trip I've ever been on for new schools, or definitely one of them was to Andorra, and it was for like Skiers Cup, which was basically the Ryder Cup for skiing, and Freeride World Tour ran it to some degree, and it kind of like went dead a few years ago. And I think that was the last one. And it's basically like a backcountry freestyle and a back big mountain section. And they run head to head between US and European athletes. But we were there for like 10 days. The weather was shit for like 8 days. So all I did was went to Sunset Park and rode every day. And it was amazing. Like, the park is so much fun and you can lap. So it's basically like a snow dome outside with Spanish bars around it. So it's like everything you could want, and like you can session till late, and it's always slushy. Well, it gets kind of icy at night, but so fun. And the rail setups are always just like just right. Like, I feel like some of the like crazy parks that you always hear about, it's like, especially now, I go in and I'm like, eh. I mean, I can see that they're sick, but I don't really want to die. So I'm gonna like be hitting half the features, whereas that park is just pretty much everything is pretty comfortable, or you can go crazy. And those, for me, those are the best parks, and that's like a really good one. So shout out to whoever's building that. It's a lot of fun.
All right, sweet. All right, let's base these matchups in the old Sunset then. And Marlo, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I guess so. The first two names that I thought would be a dope slash matchup, and now I'm questioning whether it's already happened, but Sam Zainer and Cal Carson. And good thing you chose a rail park, Nate, because...
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea, honestly, because like, I have never skied with either of them. I've seen Sam ski once, but he was like just out of the head injury that got in rail ski.
Oh, yeah.
And he was drunk. let's call it that. And yeah, I mean, he was still super good, but he was just like not in a fit state, so he wasn't like super consistent. But my guess is he's actually really consistent, and I have no idea how consistent Cal is, so I don't know. Actually, I like, genuinely, they're both super technical. I would guess Cal marginally, because I feel like he might be able to do more of the weird shit more consistently. But nice, yeah, that's nice. Not from any real point of knowledge, so.
Fair enough, huh?
It's funny that like, it is that like that weird shit consistently that does it, right? Like Vinnie Cash always yeah, just crushes it in slush, because nobody can grab like he can.
Yeah.
No one's got the brain like Vinnie Cash, you know.
They put it in upside down when he was born, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely unique. Some of the stuff that he does, like, you don't really realize how hard it is until you see a slush game, and it's like, do a 360 Venom, and you're like, well, any pro could figure that out, surely, it looks simple, and then like no one can do it. That's crazy.
Did the boys feel like as much pressure in the slush game? Like, because I know a lot of them are comp riders, right? And like, it's obviously like a completely different vibe, but I mean, it seems like there's a lot more camaraderie within a slush game, but at the same time, like, people do get very competitive, as we've seen in the videos.
Anyone in particular you're thinking of there, Nate?
Not that I'd like to out on the park, how worldwide we go, but but yeah, I was wondering, like, do the athletes themselves like take it as seriously, like, on the whole, you know?
I think it totally depends. Like, you sometimes are really surprised by someone getting randomly fired up, and sometimes they just like are trying stuff that they would never normally have tried, and because they're in a slush game, they're suddenly sending it. I feel like Parker Way again comes to mind. He wasn't like super competitive, I wouldn't say. Like, But like Parker White versus Kim at Kimbo Sessions.
I remember that game. And yeah, I feel like he got competitive.
I don't know. I wouldn't have said like I was hanging out with him and I wouldn't say it was like competitive, but he was just like somehow the atmosphere of being in a slush game or whatever. He was like, yeah, I'm going to do a switch dub 12. And he like hadn't done one for 3 years and just did it. And like ran a like double backflip from the side hit to the landing of that jump. And it was like, I think Kim was just a bit like, oh, like, I thought this was going to be kind of like a chill OG game, but it was super sick. Like, that was one of my favorite games to see, and it's, like, one of those, I'm pretty sure I said earlier, like, Parker White is one of the craziest skiers I've seen, because I saw him on that first day, but it's, like, every time I see Parker ski, it's, like, this is one of the best skiers there's ever been.
I mean, that was one of, like, my standout slash games, like, when I think of, like, the highlights, like, the PY Kimbo, like that one always like comes to mind. Like, is it was like, as you said, I wanted to, like just two of the OGs just going at it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, more generally, I think people are pretty varied in their approach, but I think like most of the guys, when they go into it that I've seen, they do basically want to win. Like, and I think that's kind of natural. Like, and more so in the cups, but I haven't been to one of the cups, so it's kind of hard for me to judge those, but it seems that way. But even in like the regular games, I feel like people end up wanting to win.
Fair enough, man. Yeah, I bet there's huge bragging rights on it.
And a lot of them are comp riders as well, so like you've got to have that competitive edge, you know, that like side of you that sure wants to win.
But even like, I mean, I think it's just natural. Like I'm not a big fan of comps. Like, I'm pretty sure that's come up in one or two New Schools articles here and there. But like, if I'm doing something, like if I'm in a, like if I'm in an environment where it is a competition, like I get competitive. So I guess everyone does.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't really be doing that and like not basically want to win. And I think by and large, it's like relatively, people are like trying stuff that they're stoked on, but also that they think can win. But then at the end, it's usually super chill. Like I've never seen any bad blood about it, put it that way.
Yeah, nice.
Fair play, man. So, I mean, like this game that we sort of thought of as got away from us a little bit, but I'm feeling of throwing like a curveball in and asking what sort of slush matchup would you like to see?
I mean, I liked the resort games a lot. Like I'd like to see kind of like, they were kind of like, they did backcountry ones more, but somewhere like, I'm trying to think of a great resort you could have it, but like La Clusaz side hit slush with two really good all mountain skiers would be sick, like Parker and Duncan Adams or something.
Yeah.
That would just make like, actually, like, I feel like if you ever actually put Parker in a game, he'd probably just cream anyone. But like, yeah, just like two really good skiers skiing around a resort and just like doing what they can do would be kind of my favorite. Those edits are always my favorite edits to watch, like when someone's just ripping the resort and showing how good at skiing they are. So I think that would translate to slush as well.
Yeah, I've always liked those resort games where they're just lapping the chairs and they're just like, oh, that mogul, like, yeah, you know,
yeah,
do like an under flip five off that mogul. And it's like, that's always super fun to watch because
yeah,
I feel like it's quite relatable. Like when I started skiing and started learning to ski freestyle, that was always how I wanted to implement it into my skiing. Like I love riding the park, but it was always just like being able to play around more on what I've always skied, you know. And those episodes are always real good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of like always been my favorite thing to see as well. But I don't know, in terms of like an actual matchup between two skiers, I don't know. I feel like, I don't think this has been a game, but like Alex Hall versus Colby Stevenson would be very crazy.
That'd be a very good game.
I think just to like, I feel like those two guys are just at the moment, every time you see them ski, it's just like, I don't even know why I try, to be honest. Like so much innate talent and so much like understanding of how skiing works almost. You just can't really believe it. Like,
all right, so to bring it a little bit closer to home,
yeah,
if we're thinking like Stoke dry slope, how about Justin Taylor Tipton versus Tom Greenway?
Ooh,
that's really hard because I have like real snapshot experience of seeing those guys ski. Like I'll see them once, because I don't ski that much in the UK, especially now. So like I'll see them ski and then I'll see them ski like 2 years later and maybe like judge the planks video contest, but I don't get like a very regular view of it. But I feel like at Stoke, I would probably back Justin. I don't know if that's the wrong, like, because Tom's really tall and he probably has to ride really long skis and the features are really tiny. And I think that would probably tip it in Justin's favor, but it would be very hard to call that one for sure. They're both insane.
We'd probably tip in Tom's favor if you took it to Tamworth, right? Like each on home soil.
They are tiny features at Tamworth too, and he manages there. I don't know. Like, I still think it's different.
I've long tipped Justin to be like a slush winner, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's super consistent and really crazy. I feel like Roe would be difficult to beat at Stoke though. Like,
oh dude, if you throw Roe at sunset, like I feel like that'd be you could go toe to toe with most people.
Like when we had Roe on the other day, I feel like we keep fucking bringing it back to like past mentions of you on this pod. Like we were talking about like creative skiers in here, and you came up pretty strong there on the like.
That's nice to hear.
Creativity within the UK, like.
That's so good to hear.
There's another episode for the exercise bike to see if it was actually mentioned or if Nate's just
pushing
its way through.
Fuck, I mean, I'm going to spend hours of my life on this shit just trying to like hear whether I've got any street cred left or not.
Just reeling you in where I can.
Oh, that's sick. By and large, I don't really like judging.
No one does.
Yeah. Yeah. Or judges for that matter.
Everyone hates judges.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no problem. Like, I think judging is like the hardest gig. It must be so difficult to do those big comps. Like, I'm so impressed by anyone that does it, because I watch the comps and I write angry comp reports about how terrible the judges are. But like, to actually, I've done a few here and there, and actually sitting there at the booth, it's so hard to do it like snapshot. But I don't like judging video stuff even more, because I feel like that's the tiniest portion of the industry where there's like $100 to go around and one person's gonna barely make it and all these other people aren't, and I don't know, it's just like I like them all to get it because there's so many six gears.
Yeah, no, fair comment. I'm glad you don't review any of the snowboarding on new schoolers, because then I'm kind of in the clear.
Oh yeah, no one watches snowboarding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're not wrong there.
Yeah, I did that Kreisberg big air recap, and I really felt the pressure. Like, it's didn't realize how quick you had to be until it's like drop.
Oh yeah.
Drop.
I felt the pressure on you doing that article. I was in like a constant dialogue with you while I was watching it, and like, we were both like talking about like, and like Milo would like hit me, I'd be like, fuck, what was that last one? Was that a trip or a dub? Like, was it a 14 or 16? I was like, dude, man, like,
I think I was having the same conversation with Twig as well.
Yeah.
And thanks for outing me to him as well, Nate. I'm really good at keeping track of these things, actually.
It's so difficult. Like those live comp reports, like I think maybe, I don't know, maybe people just don't really get like what the process of doing them is like. And it's kind of an interesting one, because we're pretty, like our thing for new schoolers has basically always been to just like provide base level comp coverage quickly, so people who haven't been able to watch the comp get the result and a quick recap straight away. But that means those things are written in real time. So you're like, we'll usually be able to like publish it and embed the videos within, I don't know, 5 minutes of the last person hitting the ground. And that basically means like two of us sat there fucking stressing balls for 2 hours. Being like trying to figure out, like, just I guess just like the judges are, like, was that grab held, blah blah blah, and the scores are kind of like giving you a clue, but you're also meant to be judging the judges, so it's like it's intense for sure, and it's fun, but it's stressful.
To be honest with you, yeah, it's probably like an added level of pressure on what the judges feel, because like you've
put your name in like the words, like you're so accountable after like people comment directly on the piece that you write being like, dude, this is wrong or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
And I mean, then like you're there seeing it. Whereas with the judges, you know, people shout out behind the TV being like, ah, fine, I should have been higher.
Yeah.
But like they just go home, you know, sit in their boxes, drink their BrewDog or their Jake Al rum. And, you know, they're none the wiser. But yeah, you guys, I feel like that is probably a more pressured way to do a comp. Like, it's probably the most pressured other than being within it.
In a way, yeah. But at the end of the day, we're not deciding the result. Like, we're just bitching about it. So I guess, like, there's a big pressure that comes from, like, the fucking coach coming around with his fucking bag full of skis to throw at you afterwards or whatever if you call it wrong. So like, I think it's...
The coaches aren't too bad. It's the younger athletes that come, like, nearly in tears, and you're just like, shit, have I just ruined your life?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, I mean, it is the name of the game, and it's tough. And it's kind of the same with the reporting, really. It's like, we're definitely going to make mistakes occasionally. And I hope that people appreciate that, yeah, like the judges, we're also human and we'll make errors now and again.
Anyway, this pod does good and we're, you know, we're changing people's perceptions. People will be nice in the comments next time.
Oh, yeah. That will be, if I see nice comments on New Schoolers,
I think we'll probably go out of business, to be honest.
That'll be the day.
Yeah, some of those are like crazy. The Olympics was crazy, doing the like live Olympics reporting, because it was at like, I was living in Spain for the last Olympics and we didn't have like great internet, so I like somehow we persuaded the office next door to let me go into the office and use their internet. Like, I had no like affiliation, nothing. I was just like, go in there at 4 a.m. They gave me the key to the building, like, go in there at 4 a.m. use the internet. I'm just like, not even really sure if I'm awake or not, trying to write these articles halfway through my night's sleep for 2 hours, and it's like the most important comp of the year, and I'm like, can barely spell. And you know that like those articles, we would be the first, and it was amazing for our traffic and our site, but
yeah,
a lot of people were going to read those, and you were like, oh, is it there or it's like, oh.
Yeah, so that's definitely sticking your head above the parapet, just ready to get shot sort of thing.
Yeah, for sure. But it turned out it was fine because the judges got it all wrong, so they did not give a fuck what was in the article.
Nice. Hope you're doing the write-up of the competition where the judges screw up more than you can, so then all the comments are going to be at the judges, not... The author of the article.
Nice.
It's always good when we can bring this pod back to taking the piss out of judges, isn't it, Gaz?
It is, yeah. I always feel very grateful.
There's nothing I like to encourage more than bringing it back around to taking the piss out of Gaz.
It's not even the judging, just me in general.
All right. You now represent all judges everywhere. So
if it's snowboarding or judging, you're taking the brunt of it on this podcast. You know that.
Like. Heavily outnumbered.
Trig, you've been a few Kimbo sessions. Is it a couple you've been to, or just the last one? But like, that's always seemed like a really like incredible event. We were talking about Ski Odai looking great, but like another Scandi one, like Kimbo sessions always looked great.
Yeah, so I think I've been to every Kimbo sessions, but the first one that was like half of the Kimbo sessions, kind of like, I think I've been to every other one. And yeah, it's an unbelievable experience. It's like not, it's the comp that like so many comps have tried to be, which is just like a chilled atmosphere with the crew.
But somehow they've act like
Kimbo. It's barely even a comp.
Yeah, it's not a comp at all, but in a sense, like,
you know, it's like the gathering of skiers. And they've somehow persuaded essentially Monster to make it not a comp and not a pressured situation and not have a crazy or too crazy a media responsibility, anything like that. It's just like the riders can do and do exactly what they want. And we get put up in these amazing houses right by the bottom of the slopes or that are part of Kleppen Resort. And yeah, it's actually what it looks like, if that makes sense. Like, it looks like it's the dream event, and in this case, it's because it's the dream event. Like, it's perfect. The park's always amazing. It's super slushy.
all the features are fun. By and large, they're not so terrifying. You think you're going to die unless you want to ski them the way some people ski them. But like, I can actually have fun going skiing there too. And yeah, that's like the reason I've been back every year. And I like call that one. I'm like, everyone and you like kind of wants to go to that one. And I'm like, no, fuck off. I'm having this one. I'm the editor now. And that's been the one that I've just been like, yeah, I'm always going to make sure I go back.
That sounds rad.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that's, yeah, I think I take back my earlier comment though. I think Kimbo Sessions probably is the best event. Like I said, that Skiers Cup thing was, and it was amazing. But yeah, Kimbo Sessions is the most amazing experience and the most insane display of just like the best skiers having the best time. And I think Kimbo Sessions is in a very privileged position because Kimbo has such a good relationship with the resort that like they find a way to kind of make it happen. The budget probably isn't that huge because it's just such a chill thing. But like, I remember going to B&E Invitationals back in the day and thinking like, well, this is going to run forever because it's the greatest thing. And then it survived a few years and then I guess they couldn't get the money together.
That was actually always a shame, eh?
Yeah. That was also, I mean, that's kind of like Kimbo Sessions kind of replaced that, I would say. Like it's the same people who were there and the same kind of mindset behind it. And Phil and Henrik are always there. And it's like Armada use it as a big thing for them. And yeah, it kind of, it's just like it cost a lot less because you didn't have to build like an insane snow sculpture, basically.
The Armada presence is strong. I mean, I think it was Tanner at the last Kimbo Sessions.
Yeah.
There was a lot of footy coming from there.
Yeah. Tanner was... I was in a house with Tanner. He's a just interesting fella.
Come on, man. Here we go.
No, Tanner's rad. He's just like the most passionate person about skiing you can possibly imagine. Like,
oh, dude. Like, I've listened and watched to a lot of Tanner's shit, and like,
yeah,
100% know where you're coming from there.
Like, and like, yeah, he's just loves it. Super stoked to be there. He. Like wasn't one of my favorite skiers going into that event. Like I've always thought he's an amazing skier, but like seeing him in person and seeing like his motivation, his dedication to skiing and yeah, his like attitude to the younger skiers and being like so stoked for them and like trying to bring them up. And also like being like, well, so what that I'm 35 or whatever he was then, I'm still going to try and learn this pretzel air and just like, stack and stack and stack and stack and then just learn it. It's super inspiring. But he is also like pretty obsessive.
Like yeah, but that's what makes him great, though, you know?
Yeah, well, it works for him. We most honestly, like you think it came, but like mostly we played Mario Kart. That's basically my recollection of Kimbo Sessions.
Who was best at Mario Kart at Kimbo Sessions?
I'm trying to think. Joss was pretty good.
Aye.
Ferdy was really good. I'm trying to remember who else. Woodsy was competitive.
I've heard Woodsy talk about Mario Kart prior to this, so like, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, no. that we like, it was bare minimum 50-50 skiing at Mario Kart. I'm really bad at these outros, but yeah, thanks you guys for having me on. Firstly, it's been fun to just chat shop about skiing. Thank you to Jay Guy Rom for supporting the podcast and everyone I've met along the way. I almost can't think of anyone in the ski industry that I've met that I haven't liked and thought was super impressive. So yeah, thanks to New Schoolers, of course, everyone, Doug, who initially gave me the job, and everyone I work with now, and actually to the bunch for some crazy adventures over the years, Zermatt Glacier Days crew for hanging out over the summers. Like all those people were like able to give me the building blocks to get to where I am now. So yeah, thanks to all those guys and yeah, everyone else I've met along the way and my mom and dad and stuff.
Honestly, much love to it. It's been a pleasure to have you on, man.
Awesome.
No doubt we'll be chatting soon. And this is class, dude. I'm sure like this has been a good episode. So thank you a lot.
thanks to Twig for joining us on that episode of the Rum and Stoke podcast. We're going to be back next week with a pretty big name guest in the skiing and snowboarding world. He was actually mentioned way back in our trailer episode when Milo, Nate and myself talked about our ideal guests. So if you want to know who it is, maybe go back, have a listen and see if you can figure out who our next guest is going to be. But in the meantime, make sure you give us a follow over on Instagram and Twitter at Rum and Stoke, and fire across any questions, any stories, anecdotes, things you want to know to our email, rumandstokepodcast@gmail.com. And then one final plug for our wonderful sponsor, J-Gal Rum. Big thanks to the support. And if you want to get 10% off any J-Gal Rum, head over to their website and use the code RUMANDSTOKE. The sun is out, lockdown is easing, so go grab yourself a bottle to enjoy in the sun. But that's it for us from this week. Stay tuned and we'll be back very shortly because we got a rum.